You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Making waves.
Welcome everyone to Making Waves. This is episode 27 tonight. My name is Justin. I'm along with my co-host here, Chad.
Hello.
Hey, Chad. Very special presentation today, guys, because we have someone all the way from, he's in Helsinki right now, but from Sweden. Johannes from the band Avatar. Welcome, Johannes. Thank you for joining us today on Making Waves.
Well, thank you for having me. And that was the biggest applaud I've gotten in a while.
I was gonna make it a full round, you know, but I know that nobody else can see us. It's just vocal, so I didn't want to embarrass myself too much here.
Well, I think that's a good lead into what we should first talk about here. You guys have had exciting, well, last week and going into this week with you guys in this very high quality production of Avatar Ages, the Impossible Concert Experience, a four-parter. As we speak, and I think so far you've done Dreams and Illusions.
Yeah, and that means I named these. Oh yeah, we got Madness coming up, and
Madness on Saturday.
End up with exactly, and then after that we got Memories.
Yeah, this kind of coincides with you guys is I think your vision of the band and how the whole packaging and branding of the band is like. You guys are very into the visual aspect to kind of go along in marriage with the music, but this isn't your first foray into doing something this big. I mean, you guys did the Legends of Avatar Country.
Yeah.
It's almost like an hour long film over the album. Has this always been something that you guys start out with? This, your vision was going to be like, we're going to tie this in and make this band almost conceptual.
No, like that is something that grew over time because we are one of those bands where most of us have played together since we were teenagers. So there was no grand, well, there was a grand vision in the beginning of, I'm going to learn how to play guitar, you know, and there's the grand vision that we're going to write a song. So you can't say that it was anything there since day one because we discovered anything and everything within the band. But that being said, over time, we have learned about ourselves and have nurtured that side of ourselves that is really into the theatrics. And we started because, you know, at some point being those teenagers in a band, you realize that, oh, maybe you're supposed to look like something. Oh, it's called an image. Ah, we need an image. Okay, so let's wear the same clothes I wore to school yesterday, but stand in a graveyard. All right. You know, is this an image? I don't know. You know, and you're a kid, whatever. And we never quite nailed getting an image. You know, at some point we all bought black shirts, and that felt radical. It wasn't until we stopped thinking about image and laid a focus on treating it anything visual that comes in regards to the band to treat it as art. So, and when we realized that anything visual you can do, like is all about answering the question, what does our music look like? Which is a pretty damn abstract question until you look at successful examples of that. And the extremes are always Kiss or Rammstein, Slipknot, Alice Cooper, whatever, you know, but it's also true for, I don't know, Green Day. It's also true for Foo Fighters. Like Foo Fighters kind of sound like plaid shirts, jeans and t-shirts, having a good time with the lads. And that's what they look like. Holy cow, you know? So it's a question that's very hard to answer when you're a young kid. But it grew over time.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, short answer, no. It wasn't always with us, but it grew to become a big part of why we like being in a band.
Well, I was going to mention as like the bands you mentioned, Alice Cooper and Kiss and Rammstein and Slipknot, they are, you guys kind of follow in those footsteps. Like the music is never, the presentation doesn't override the quality of the music. It's just another component to it. So it's not like you guys are just some visual band and the music's kind of throwaway. What you guys do is very intricate. Very, you know, it's got a lot of components going on. There's definitely kind of genres rolling into one. But I think that's more musical talk. So I'd rather have a musician like Chad talk to you about that.
Hey, man. We've toured together during my years in Wilson, and I've seen it firsthand on stage, on the road. I've seen it on the boat. I've seen it overseas. When I think about the times that I've been in a room with you guys, both on and off stage, I never really got a it wasn't really, I think, until The Ship, maybe, that we did the first one we did together, that I realized that you guys just weren't in a stamp of that image, you know, like the idea of like, cause you went on the road, it never changed. It felt like when you came inside of the room, that version of what you saw on stage was consistently there. Do you find yourself, like for us in the back, in the background watching what's going on, I was like, these guys never break character. So there's a part of us thinking like, fuck, man, maybe this is just what happens in Sweden, you know, like maybe these people are just always like this. This is just, they're not going to give up the ghost, you know. But do you find yourself having a hard time? I know that we're talking to you right now in Helsinki while you're coming out of a delicious sauna. So you're clearly having a break away from what is Avatar. But when you're on the road, for instance, do you find yourself having a hard time breaking away from the art that is your band and just being yourself? Do you find it harder to do that, I should say?
Well, I ended up in a similar discussion in another interview, I guess, last week. And I, cheesy as it is, quoted Bruce Banner in the first Avengers movie, like, that's my secret, I'm always angry. There isn't a character to get into and to get out of. As far as I can tell, ask my wife, ask friends, ask people, they say, yeah, I change before I go on stage. We change. But for me, it's more a focus shift, you know, or kind of just change mindset. But it's not a character, it's not a persona as much as, you know, if you go out clubbing with the girls dancing all night on a Saturday, you behave in a different way than you do when you go and have dinner or tea with grandma on Sunday. However, both those sides of you are equally valid and real and part of who you are. And that is kind of how I view what we do. So it's not, there's nothing invented about it. And I think that is why it's so also easy to tap into, because it's always there. There was no paper version of this that then was applied into reality. This was just something that came out of thin air because it was always present. So that, I think, is why we can give this impression of being that we were always those guys backstage, or, you know, wherever. It's just because it is who we are. Then it's just the, you know, the Spinal Tap thing of dialing it up to 11. Or pro wrestler thing, maybe, but, you know, like the greatest personas are still, you know, just dial up versions of who they were, Ric Flair or Steve Austin, you know.
My favorite version of that is Andy Kaufman, but that's more or less the mystique and the mystery of it. And I think that you hold true to that. I even think about it this way when I'm thinking about Avatar. Is like, I know what you're doing in a sense. I know that you're taking a snapshot of not just the way you physically look, but your artistic integrity and what you're trying to create. You seem to be in that moment because you're a true artist the entire time. But I watch your visuals and I've always praised them. I see the time, the work, and at least thought process that's going into it. It's evident in this live stream series that you're doing. It's not just a regular live stream. There's cuts and pieces, and there's different jarring imagery going on in the background, as well as we're moving from one cadence to another cadence into ultimately a story. And if you could, I guess, maybe like, One of the questions I've always asked is, what is the true story? Or is it just an album is a book in a series? How do you view Avatar's career thus far?
In terms of
You encapsulate like the idea. When I see, like, for instance, Hail the Apocalypse version of Avatar, and then I see, you know, the next version, which would be Avatar Country, and I'm watching all the imagery that goes along with that. It's all part of a theme inside of the record. But do you see each record as a separate, like Harry Potter has different books?
I mean, I saw parts. Yeah, no, yeah. Well, yes. Yeah, I guess so, but not in a deliberate kind of way. It's just that is what happens to any band who, you know, write and creates. You know, if you write your own stuff and you write from the heart, and which is the case with 99% of all the metal bands, I would say, you know, we don't hire help for our songwriting, which means they all become snapshots on whatever was going on in our minds. So there's that foundation in the songs, just how the riffs sound, and you're just your choice of words, whether you try to be, no matter what you try to do with your songs, that all comes from whatever goes on in your life, you know? And in that sense, yeah, it's our life's story. Every other year, a new album comes out and kind of it's an accumulation of whatever has been going on, or parts at least of what's been going on in our lives up until that point, alongside which simply just being full, being built around what our muse, whatever the spirits whispered in our sleep that we were meant to do at that time, be it as, hey, a concept album sounds really hard and complicated to make. You know how to make one? No, I have no idea. Cool. Okay, let's try. What should we do? A fable. Okay, and start from there. This is a challenge now. Or, hey, this inside joke with Jonas being a king, that's kind of funny. Yeah, I said Avatar Country once on stage. That's pretty cool. Yeah. All right. I like listening to Manowar before every show we have done this year. Yeah, me too. Oh, Avatar can. Okay, I guess that's what we're doing. Yeah, we were supposed to do this thing. No, but we have, this is what, I can only think about this now. Me too. Okay, that's happening. And it kind of just, we go with the flow of the creative impulses, I guess. And as such, there's no deliberate plan that because we did this, we need to do that now. Albeit that happens kind of, I guess, by itself, because, you know, if you had a lot of pizza, you want some ice cream. And that is definitely like Avatar Country was this attempt to, you know, like among a lot of other things, it was us having fun, but also trying to be funny, trying to do some form of comedy in a metal form. And maybe a lot of this is very insular, very between five guys smelling their own farts and, you know, just... that the idea that we are that the songs weren't really joke songs, but the great joke behind it being that they all are about a king, and the king is fucking Jonas, and Jonas starting doing it because, you know, named himself the king on Facebook as a middle name to annoy his friends, and it worked until it got funny, and then he started to gift us framed signed photos of himself, and, you know, and all these things, but that makes sense to us. But as we did that, then of course there's this, then you are more likely and more inclined to do the next thing, like, okay, I didn't get to deal with a lot of dark shit artistically in the last 2 years because we did Avatar Country. That's all coming out now.
Yeah.
So it's bound to happen in a certain way, but no deliberate plan. No, you know, I don't know what will happen in our year 7 on Hogwarts, you know. That is shrouded in mystery, because it will just be a reflection of our lives and what happens in general.
The what I just took away from that is very more Kaufman-esque than I was expecting to get. So I'm like super jazzed about the idea as a dude in a band, right? Smelling my band's farts.
Yeah.
You know, I can think about us naming a record Full Blast Fuckery out of sheer, like, it just sounded like a song. We had a 30-second song on a record, and we're like, what does it sound like? We told somebody, and like, it sounds like Full Blast Fuckery. And then we just stopped never stop saying it, right? And from there on, our whole entirety, we could do whatever we wanted, but everybody would still be like, that's the fuckery band, you know? And you kind of get a stamp of some sort of approval. And for me, like hearing your story about that record in particular and it being almost like a trolling hilarity behind it all from a friendship circle that exemplified itself into a mash, not just a national, but a worldwide known piece of imagery. It's in itself is the most incredibly dope form of art that I think that there is, because there's nothing more true and unabashed than that. And now you get to move on to whatever it is. And even that, I feel like, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I feel like that's even a version of trolling the last version of yourself. And if I can be so bold, the darkness that you're about to go into, how do you feel about it? I'm asking you, like, how do you feel knowing that in the back of your mind, everything, every step that you take forward, there's this behind you is this inside joke that you spent 2 years of your life essentially putting on a pedestal.
First and foremost, it's neither good nor bad. It's just, it's part of something good because it's part of the same. It's ultimately, in a way, like probably the most punk rock thing we have done in terms of just fucking with people's expectations. And just, you know, we are in that way kind of demanding of our fans in a way, I guess. Like, okay, we're going to do what we feel like doing. And this is the ride we're on now. You thought you were going to be in a carousel, but it's a roller coaster. If that was a roller coaster, oh no, it's the splashy rides with water, whatever it's called.
Splash Mountain?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. The one in Gothenburg is called Flume Ride. But I don't know if that would be an international term.
No, we have a lot of flumes here. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's okay. Cool. And then they have to come on board, and it can be sometimes, I guess, kind of jarring what will come next for us, because whatever we do, because Hunter Gatherer is not a concept album, but we treat things in a very conceptual manner nowadays, I guess, because we simply got very, very good at thinking big picture and thinking intention due to having worked with concept albums in the past. And it's just, it's so different. Yeah, it was a comedy. Yeah, it's, you know, steps away from stuff, but ultimately it's perfectly in line with our mission statement as a band. It's still a middle finger to anyone else's idea and expectations of what we are supposed to do. And once it's out there, it's something we pull off with so much passion for what we're doing and just a big bucket of love and respect for the people who go on the ride with us. And that is the exact same thing if we want to talk about songs that deal with the best of times as the songs that deal with the worst of times. As we now did an album about that ask way heavier questions, I guess, about what it means to be a human right now and trying to understand the kind of world we live in where, whoops, suddenly Fear Factory was totally right. And here I sit in this cyberpunk dystopia that we were warned about in all of those books, movies, and albums of the 80s and 90s. You know, it's RoboCop out there. What happened? And that is also a sincere trip that now we are dedicating ourselves to wholeheartedly. And again, with a big bucket of love and respect for the people who are willing to go on that ride with us.
Yeah. Well, speaking of ride with Hunter Gatherer, you guys kind of came out of the box with Silence in the Age of Apes, which is a big, huge bunch of Swedish metal wallop. That song is really aggressive. And I mean, there's no fairy tale behind that thing. It just comes right at your throat. Was that the intention, was to get a song out that was going to hit people really hard quickly?
Yeah, I think it's always good to let the first thing people hear be, you know, a very clear statement of what's going to happen. I think every band feels it's very hard to find that one song that defines an album? I mean, does Thriller sound like Human Nature or like Beat It or like Thriller? You know, it's hard to find that one song, even if it's not Thriller, that defines it all. But that's one of those songs that really show the intention. I feel like this is a way more aggressive album. This is a way darker album. This is a lot of things like that, you know. This is something more violent and sinister. So, and then of course are peaks and valleys and a wider emotional range on the album at large. But I get the biggest distinction, that is the thing that distinguishes this album the most, Hunter Gatherer the most, compared to what came just before, is the aggression and is the darkness.
You did mention the word violent, and that's a great description of that song, but it never lost its groove.
Yeah, thank you. I think, one, because we started doing very aggressive music, and also the kind of covers we played, going back to us being those teenagers learning how to play, was all about the aggressive stuff. You know, The Haunted is the most important influence on this band, will always be. It's up there, like, if you know, we listen to a lot of stuff, we love a lot of stuff, and there's this tiny click of bands that we collectively loved and tried to figure out what are they doing when we learn to play. And the one we did that the most with was probably The Haunted. And so that aggression was always there in the beginning, but a big difference that made it very interesting and cool to do it as a 30-something-year-old compared to someone in your late teens and early 20s, is that if you would compare our early stuff to a horror movie and a horror movie character, the earlier stuff of Avatar would be someone who would bash your skull in with a hammer. There's not so much precision. It's a bit messy, but it's also quite spectacular, and it does give result eventually. Then when doing, you know, then you live a decade more, and then you do more aggressive stuff again. Then that horror movie killer has turned into more of a Hannibal Lecter style person. It's someone with a bit more expertise and precision, I feel. Someone who knows his way how to use a scalpel, and with one cut and stab can do maximum damage. So I think that is a very different vibe here, and also doing, you know, letting your rage out, but at the same time, artistically, there's a weird sense of accountability on this one that to me makes it is a different kind of heavy, because I try to be have as little delusion as possible in what is being said with that kind of anger. Because again, when you write an aggressive song when you're 17, you can talk about everyone in the grown-up world being wrong, assuming you are always right, or you can have fun trying to be as brutal as possible, but not really, maybe, or you don't have to think too much about what those words actually mean to you or to someone. And now, again, it's more dangerous in a way now. Does that make sense at all?
No, it actually does. It does, because I mean, I think when you're kids and you're playing aggressive music, I think that's just the arrogance of youth. You know, what do adults know? It's us against them.
Up for some of the best music in the world. That arrogance is so important. And but it's just that when bands, I think one of the reasons why many times we romanticize the first handful of albums in a band's catalog are those bands that then, whichever way they made something work in the beginning, they try to keep that thing going for way too long. Mm-hmm. And I think in order to keep doing something that is, you know, first and foremost good, really good, but also then somewhat relevant at the very least to yourself, you have to dare to evolve and, you know, go on that trip with your music, because you cannot, that sledgehammer to the face, I guess, is the only way if you have an injury like that, then maybe you can stay in the same mindset album after album after album.
Yeah.
But if you have the exact same thing to say 5 or 10 albums into your career, I feel like you've been lying to us this whole time.
Yeah, there are very few exceptions. I mean, Slayer, you can take Slayer's Haunting the Chapel and then listen to God Hates Them All. There's a 25-year span, but the violence is still there. It's just very refined.
Yeah, exactly. And and that works really well. But, you know, they did try a bunch of stuff.
Ventured. They ventured and realized that's you. Stay in your lane. That was staying in your lane.
But it's also, but still stuff happened along. I think. But also in their case, I think it's like Cannibal Corpse, for instance, also. Number one, there are more changes and more development there than we give credit to those bands, too, in my opinion. Also, second, I guess in both of cases, it's rooted kind of in, it's a genre of its own, a genre of entertainment where, you know, like it's horror stories. Mm-hmm. So it comes with a specific structures. And to be perfectly honest, yes, God Hates Us All. I really love that album. Disciple is one of those, that's one of those songs that stayed with us forever, like in the pre-show playlist in the dressing room, you know. But isn't it also true that we listen to early Slayer a tiny bit more than we did to later Slayer?
Oh, absolutely. You can't get past Rain and Blood.
Exactly. Yeah. And I am a huge Denim Townsend fan. Mm-hmm. And there, he has an approach that is incredibly inspiring to me. Specifically this, that I feel like his approach, his reasons to make music are constantly redefined and rediscovered. And it's an ongoing debate that he seems to have with himself that really puts the intention of why should I do this thing right now comes into the forefront. So there's a very distinct difference between that 19-year-old kid that got signed to sing with Steve Vai to those solo debut things and a strapping young lad.
Yeah.
And just what he does now was he is in his, I think, yeah, he's in his late 40s. And it's all, it's such a trip to be a part of as a fan, because there's so much discovery, so much development, and so much sincerity that he keeps feeding that, because he never ever bought into the thing of this thing became particularly popular now, so now I have to stunt my growth to keep this thing going.
Yeah. I think artists like everyone from Steven Wilson to Opeth run into that. Same thing.
Two great examples of that. Now Steven Wilson was almost like sounded like pop music.
The new stuff's very dancey, and people, you know, as longtime fans, I'm like, if you're a fan, you're going to take the journey. That's as simple. Don't be a pedestrian here. Don't be a tourist. Be a fan.
And also, like, he also has a podcast with a friend now whose name escapes me, but where they did. You know, they talk about album years and just do deep cuts on whatever albums they liked from those years that aren't the obvious picks. But then again, then you go back, what the music that they talk about from the 70s and 80s, the new wave and everything on top of the prog that he would be most known for in the beginning of his career, makes perfect sense what he's doing now.
Yeah.
If you pay some attention, same with Opeth.
Yeah, the argument there for most people. I'm sorry. I just want to finish this one thought.
We've just been talking about this, all these different bands, but I don't think we've ever really leaned into like what you guys were. You mentioned what you were covering when you guys first started being a band.
Yeah.
And the aggression of those acts, and we had the some ship rockers actually do the podcast, the Swedes here, and we had asked them some. Some of their early influences. We asked them, you know, what are they like around? What did they lean into outside of, Western music over here in the States? Because everything that they kept naming all kind of felt like it came from, you know, the Americas or something. But there's such a huge, rich history of music that has defined what happens here in the U.S. for many, many years. And I was just wondering, what did you guys kind of cut your teeth on as a band in those aggressive years, learning how to play your instruments? And were any of those acts from your hometown or surrounding areas?
There was The Haunted, of course, that's the whole Swedish West Coast thing played a huge influence on us. And The Haunted, In Flames, The Haunted, then, because we were just a few years too young to really, at the time, right away, know At the Gates. So for us, it was The Haunted made me do it. And like, oh, they were in a band called At the Gates. So then, oh, wow, okay, cool. And then, and I said In Flames, and then we had a Dark Tranquility, of course. And then you venture just a tiny bit south, I guess a 2.5 hour car ride. And then you got Soil Work. And then, yeah, then you're going to have to hike up in northern Sweden, but you got Meshuggah there. That was important. We tried to cover a song by them. Then
how'd it go?
What else? Oh, well, for Jonas and John, really well. John also at that time had a beef with another drummer kid who also practiced all summer. You know, they had a teenage beef, and he heard in high school from, I guess, Jonas, something like, we're covering a Future Breed Machine. He's like, that's impossible. No one can, yeah. John can't possibly play that. And yeah, he can. And one day he showed up at the rehearsal. Okay, show me. And John showed me. And he said, all right. And then he left. And John won that war, I guess, ultimately.
Yeah.
That's great. So it was, you know, those Gothenburg dudes. And then we covered Maiden and Cannibal Corpse and Slayer and Cryptopsy. And did I say Halloween? Because Halloween was definitely there as well. So, because all in all, you know, if you're born in the mid 80s, a Swedish metal, the kind of stuff that was going on when you discovered heavy music, like when I started to really, you know, stop cutting my hair, well, I guess when I was 12 or 14, whatever, but got into heavy music when I was 12. And that is then Black Sabbath has reunited. And so they kind of come back up on the radar, I guess, for us kids. At the same time as in Europe, you had this huge revival spearheaded by Hammerfall getting really popular, which kind of shone a light on all those German power metal bands. You know, they pull them up with them as well. And that is where I got started. Blind Guardian, Halloween, Gamma Ray, and, you know, what are they called? All of those. And at the same time, the Gothenburg death metal stuff, the melodic death metal stuff, the late 90s, early 2000s, and kind of picked that side. And then it took me a couple of years to understand that the new metal, or whatever you want to call it, was all right too. I was very hesitant. Now I love Slipknot. Now I love System of a Down. At the time there, you kind of had to, there was a thing when I was 15 where, no, you either listen to music that came out this year or 20 years ago, you know, pick a side.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. But I remember that clearly too.
Yeah, those bands you mentioned, A System and Slipknot would not exist without the Gothenburg sound. That is a sign of quality coming from that area. And you guys being from there, obviously it's such a rich history of bands from Entombed to In Flames that you mentioned. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But you guys are kind of redefining what it is to be from that sound. I mean, you still keep the melodic death metal aspect, but you're also bringing in all these other pieces of almost like the Norwegian death metal stuff with the orchestral pieces and things like that. So,
yeah, I think like it kind of started there where a certain way of thinking of riffs and a certain thing that Swedish bands in general seems to, what we all share in one way or another, that, you know, putting melodic thinking into the forefront, that we carry with us. But at the same time, it was cool and inspiring and helpful in the beginning, like in the early days, to feel like, oh, you can be from our town and totally make it, because they did. And you are 16 and you play covers of them, but then suddenly you start to want to build your own identity. And for a while there, we were kind of fed up of being like the little brother generation of In Flames and all the other guys, because then we were desperately seeking our own thing, and whatever we felt was our own thing that we had going, we still felt that whatever the fan scene still asked me about In Flames, and I was like, fuck you. then, you know, you come full circle and embrace it. And now it's just gratitude. But I think, so the melodic thinking and just the simple thing of being huge death metal fans who learn to play by playing death metal covers, but at the same time, then not necessarily writing death metal songs, but it's kind of part of you. That, I guess, gives us that some kind of vibe that would align a bit with melodic death metal. But then at the same time, then we realize some stuff that music teachers have talked about grooving, being in the pocket. What does, you know, you don't really know what that means when you try to shred your ass off for the first couple of years of your existence as a musician. But then suddenly, like, hey, we have stood in this rehearsed room for a lot of years together now. And then you start to really listen how the bass player and the drummer have learned to play together, which means that without thinking, just that he hits the bass, so it really feels like it's being sucked straight into the bass drum. And they lock in and you start to hear that in the performance of it. You get it for free because you've been rehearsing like a crazy man, five crazy kids, and with the lights out of you, so you cannot look at the neck of the guitar, because then that would be cheating, because then you can't headbang while playing if you keep looking at the guitar while you rehearse. So you stand in the dark and you stand there for so long.
So hold on, wait, I'm sorry to interrupt, yeah. But is this a fucking thing? Is this
a thing with it. And I heard a podcast where Mikael Åkerfeldt told us listeners that Opeth also did that back in the day, in the early days. So, okay. But we did it.
So you play in the dark to kind of just learn the...
Yeah, and also what we also would do is, you know, we figure out what's the tempo of the song, then John would plug in, a metronome, and we would go to that. We would play in 10 steps from half tempo to full tempo over and over every song in the dark. And for a singer, it just made me very, very drowsy.
Yeah.
But for the other guys, brilliant. And then there was absolutely no oxygen in there. We were dubbed the underwear rockers, calzón rockarna, by the guys from the neighboring rehearse rooms, because we would come out on breaks like everyone undressed just in our underwear.
I love all of this. Like, I can literally in my mind, I can see the internal pressure going on between all of you. It's like, no, motherfucker, you're taking your fucking pants off, and the lights are coming off, and we're gonna get weird with it. And if you don't do it, you're a pussy, or whatever the version is.
Well, it sounds like
the thing is, we are also Swedish, so there was no pressure, but also no discomfort about the idea of getting undressed in front of each other.
Yeah,
that's you guys on the other side of the pond, and you're all weird. None of you have seen your dad naked.
I've seen that dude naked all the time. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good thing.
It's funny because in general, I do surveys.
I do surveys when, and it's kind of, I don't know, a rite of passage when there's a new dude in the crew, for instance, and especially if they're American, like I ask them uncomfortable questions such as, have you seen your dad naked?
Yeah, have you got full dad dick? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Because it's just weird. So never have seen the ball sack from which you once came. It's just weird to me if you haven't.
I agree.
I'm not in a hurry to go see my mom's vagina, but I'll look at my dad's balls, no problem.
Yeah, but I also see my mom naked. You know, like,
well, yeah, of course, but I don't need to do a deep dive.
No, I didn't. But that's another thing. Again, like if anyone involved are enjoying themselves in a weird way, then it's weird.
Sure.
Yeah.
But just,
like, if you're looking at dad's dick and you got a full on erect child dick, then it's going to get a little weird, right?
Then it gets weird, you know, but
or vice versa.
That tends to not be the thing that happens in healthy family relationships.
Yeah.
But if you own or rent a cabin and there's a lake there and it's summer and you jump in after you have played around, who gives a shit? You're the same family. You are all a bucket of the same DNA. That's just swirling around, you know?
Yeah. Hey, other than music, when you were growing up, were there books or movies that kind of influenced your creativity or your artistry?
Oh, yeah. Probably. I have to think for a moment. But try to remember which books from back in the day.
Even ones that are recent.
Well, recent for Hunter Gatherer was very important, that book Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari. I recommend that all the time now to people. It's A Brief History of Humankind. I think it's the like subtitle of that book. He's a historian, and he has through how everything is, how everything's connected, man. And I might just, you really messes with your perspective of what you think thought happened historically, and not in a, you know, aliens built the pyramids and Tarzan was a moose or whatever, not that stuff, but more like simple thing as we became agricultural because we you know, we think it's kind of, we tamed the wheat, but the wheat tamed us. What happened is we were hunter-gatherers. Album title kind of comes from here. We were gathering stuff and we carried it home to camp, and we dropped some seeds on the way. And over the years, then suddenly there's some wheat a bit closer to camp next season. And we start dropping more seeds as we pick them up, and we start to understand something. And maybe if I'd make a hole and put some seeds there, oh, look, it grows. And suddenly the wheat, by starting to grow closer and closer to home, we finally figure it out and we start to plow up the fields and everything. But this kind of, the wheat had the initiative rather than the humans with that. And we became agricultural. And the fascinating part with that is that it was, of course, awesome for us as a species. But it was kind of an awful thing for us on an individual level. Because ultimately, agriculture, becoming farmers, we were able to feed more. We start, you know, and we multiply, which is, you know, we are like the flowers and the bees and everyone else. That's what we strive to do as a species. But as an individual, suddenly we have arthritis, because instead of climbing trees and looking for fruit and berries and resting bears and looking like MMA fighters, all of us, suddenly we bent over the fields to pick up the rocks so we can grow more stuff. And, you know, we destroy our backs. We get disc hernias and arthritis in our knees. And suddenly we need to store stuff for winter. And then we need a guard because someone can steal that. Oh, suddenly we care about the territory that we need to build that wall suddenly. And we also need to have more kids because we need more people to work the field, and we can't breastfeed them for that long anymore. No, we can make them wheat porridge. Oh, they malnourish, they die. Oh, let's make another one. Oh, half child mortality goes up, war goes up, sickness. We live closer together. We sneeze in each other's mouths, you know, and no one wore masks back then either. So we, all of this terrible on an individual level, then the fantastic for us as a species. And fast forward, we do it again with the Industrial Revolution, and every step of the way, like, wow, now we have machines that feed us and clothe us. Now we're real efficient. Yeah, but you remember how we, you know, how a work day in the Stone Age was go get that apple, and then it was go grow that apple, and that made things more complicated. And now it's, I don't know, now you're in that factory, and oh, children can work in that factory too. Oh, you don't need to see the sun. Oh, you can live in London under that thick blanket of smog, and you get stone lung. And we need you down in the mines now, by the way, to keep this machine going. And we work longer and longer hours. And it's just in the last 100 years or so, post World War II, or maybe one, I don't remember where Harari would draw the line, but it's, you know, fairly recent that we suddenly are increasing quality of life on an individual level in a widespread way on Earth. That is super recent. Now the problem is that we're doing it in a way where we are making it impossible to live on this planet for ourselves. So we need to figure that one out. And Hunter Gatherer, the album, is very much, again, we are biologically that wheat dropping MMA fit dude and dudette in the woods. And then now we sit on Zoom. What the fuck is going on? And what's next? And it seems we are in that fork in the road. Is it going to be Star Trek or Mad Max? And we have a choice, but we have to hurry, and we have to outrun ourselves in this.
Sounds like,
are you Star Trek or Mad Max?
I was going to say,
I prefer watching Mad Max, but if I get to choose a future to live in, I like the one where we have solved everything and go out in space and help other creatures from other planets solve their shit. That is the future that I like to boldly go where no one's gone before. Then I am more entertained by Mad Max.
Totally.
All right. Well, speaking of Mad Max, let's talk about Avatar and their participation in Shiprocked.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the moments that stands out for me, other than you guys doing your performances, is when you were with Kenny and Johnny and you did Typo Negative Black Number One.
Yes.
Obviously, anyone that sees you or hears you, obviously, Peter Steele has probably been an influence in your life.
Yes, definitely. Example.
Yeah,
that predates.
Speaking of dad
Avatar.
Dicks, sorry.
Yeah, he's the dad dick we all
aspire to
growing up. Yeah, and aspire to be. Yes, big influence, especially getting into heavy music and also voice changing with puberty and realize, oh, I do not quite sound like the falsettos that I'm such a fan of. And now I have a fairly wide range, but that's not where I sit naturally. And to then hear that you could do heavy music, be super cool, but sound like this, was very inspiring. And to this day, I'm a big Typo fan. And yeah, playing with them, they haven't played Typo Negative stuff for 10 years when that happens.
Yeah.
It's hard to, that is one of those things, like if I would have told myself when I was a kid, the friend that I would hang with, his name is also Johannes, and his family had a season's tickets for the local ice hockey team of Gothenburg, so Frölunda, and I have this strong memory of like going on Saturdays when they would have one ticket over, I could come with them, watch a Frölunda game, then go home, play computer games, and listen through all his Typo Negative albums. And that was a routine a couple of times, it's definitely became part of my DNA.
Yeah, that was a big moment. I think a lot of people realize that more after the fact, that was a big moment that they hadn't played it forever. And you got up there and someone who was a fan who's now in a major band singing it. That was just an extraordinary moment. That was one of the things that was a highlight for me as far as an Avatar.
Credit to Matt from Papio, because he also a huge Typo fan. So he had practiced the bass line to such detail that on the recording, this tempo kind of, when they scale everything back after the crazy middle part, he kind of slows down a bit. And it's one of those mistakes they end up keeping. And Matt played it the exact same way. It slowed down the exact same way as on the album.
Yeah. Well, that bass line sets that's the song. Mm-hmm. Is that just kind of creepy little, it just kind of gives you the vibe. Yeah. But Chad's really good with, he's got some questions about Shiprock experience with you guys.
You said something that was really perfectly aligned with how I've always felt about Shiprock. And that was, if I would have told myself this when I was younger, I remember the first time that Wilson did the ship and when we pulled up to the port, the overwhelming feeling for us at the time, we were pretty much known by nobody. We'd done like one tour and we'd all come from bands who'd done the touring thing before, but by no means anybody gave a shit, right? The ship just took a liking to us for some reason and invited us onto the ship. But I remember being overwhelmed, and I'm trying to remember exactly where you guys might have been in your career. I believe it was the Hail the Apocalypse record cycle that you first did the ship.
Must be, yes.
So you had actually toured in the States at that point.
We were heading somewhere for sure. Also, we had the honor of being like the number one requested band for the first time. I guess there was a voting thing on the homepage or something.
Yeah.
At least maybe they told this to all bands. I don't know. I didn't.
No, you were.
I think we were right.
You're right.
Yeah. I remember the poll. But have you ever played a ship before at that point in time? Oh fuck.
Yes.
Kicked me right out of the game right there in this question.
No, we have there's this cruise ships going, well, regular there's regular ferry traffic between Stockholm and Sweden and Finland, and think the first time was in 2008. The sadly now gone Close Up magazine, a Swedish metal magazine that just disappeared last year or 2 years ago or so, after having around since 91. But we were on their cruise with Municipal Waste, Danko Jones, soil work that we already spoke about, must have been a bunch more. But yeah, Debauchery. And also because the problem was we played day two, and it's just a 2 day cruise. You know, you go, it went to Finland and back. Uh-huh. So it was over the weekend kind of thing, 48 hours or so. And we played day two, and we didn't really care about that fact during day one. Read the article, because of course the magazine then did a big piece about their own cruise, and you know, just didn't notice. The Avatar guitar player is laying passed out on the stairs as I walk to my cabin at 9 a.m. with some lady in his arms. The debauchery. And then we also switched radio station, did a similar one. And I think there was, oh yeah, then there was one between Gothenburg and down to Denmark, even shorter cruise. And even more insane what you can squeeze in that short of a time. I really can't say so. It's too much privacy. And that is me. Oh my God.
You have some memories right now?
Yes. It's good and bad at the same time. But yeah.
So when you take all of that debauchery, and now you've been through it, and now you're going to do the Shiprock experience, and there's 5 fucking days of this shit. Are you worried at this point when you're on the ship? You're like, oh, I know what happens on ships with our band, but we've only had to be here for 2 days, and now we have to do it for 5 days. Are we gonna die? How did you feel about it when you were on the ship?
Well, I tried to remember. Like, there must be the first year that we came. It felt more vacation. Yeah, like a totally different approach. But again, it's a, you know, when you've done it a couple of times, like. This was also an opportunity to remember these other cruises were in like Sweden and Finland and stuff in February. And this one was now in, yeah, also in February stuff, but in going to Mexico or to the Bahamas. So sitting very still and chilling and burning your pasty self to a red crust of something that used to be a huge person, you know, that's kind of satisfies those needs. But yeah, I think there was some footage also of me doing karaoke late on one of those cruises, but it all went really well, except there was not that, for me at least, not that kind of debauchery. The only thing that happened, this is harmless, but it was still funny once I realized that. So we were told that there is this band, like live band karaoke. So there's a band who plays the songs, but you choose from a list and you go up and sing it with them. Yeah. Cool. We went looking for them. They should be over there. Found them. Start asking them for request songs. Where is the set list? How does this work? And won't stop barring this guy. A couple of minutes in, I realized this is not the karaoke band. This is just some people trying to play this. Yeah, I should probably not stand here on stage next to this bass player asking for requesting Judas Priest songs.
Is this on Shiprock?
This is on Shiprock, yeah. And he was so nice to me.
I wonder what band it was. Were they in the casino at the time?
Yeah, exactly. This was on casino and young. Huh. And he was just spoke with me like very, he was so nice, and but nice as if he was speaking to a child as well, you know?
Yeah,
I wasn't threatening or anything, you know, like there was nothing. It's just, yeah. I was happy. I was there for the karaoke, but then we found the karaoke and I got to do Breaking the Law. So it was
nice. So it all turned up Milhouse anyways. That's great. Yeah. Great to hear. So when you guys got to play for the first time on the ship, did it feel like you were the number one most requested band on the show? I was in the room and it felt like that. But how did it feel for I think it was a theater was your first show on?
Yeah, I guess so, right? Because as we did it twice, I'm trying to.
I remember the room, and I remember like people like literally running in because it's not. I forgot who played right before you guys.
Was it the stage then that you people could also stand real on the sides of the stage, right? So you felt a little bit like you're in a boxing.
Yes, room, yes, 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 yes.
That must have been the first one. Yeah, Yeah, but the thing is that we have, ever since we start to play in front of more people than we were on stage, which was kind of the magic, you know, that magic number for us, you know, as long as there's six people watching, the audience is in majority. And as, since those days, we always felt like the most requested band in of the night, you know, because that's the mindset you got to have, I guess. Or maybe you don't, but we did. So it's hard to compare. But yeah, we were told that. We are like, again, I didn't fact check it. I chose to believe it. And then you feel a bit like the bee's knees. I just remember that because, you know, we do it. There's still some jet lag in the head. There's had been a bit of a break since the last thing we did before that is, you know, day one of touring, because then we did some Texas and stuff right after. So, you know, there's being in shape, but then there's being in ring shape, fighter shape. Somehow that doesn't matter how much cardio you do, you have to get your stage cardio going. So I remember it being like rough. And that probably also had something to do with being high on a whole lot of adrenaline there.
Yeah, totally. The other question that I guess I should ask, which I often do ask, is after you were, the ship came back and we're back at port and you get off of it, there's a thing called Sea Legs. And I'm assuming that you've done a few cruises before, but you haven't done them for 5 days in a row. Did you guys have to go directly onto a tour or something, or did you go home, or do you remember?
Yeah, no,
that
we went
moment?
straight on a bus. Yeah, but see, like, I love that feel. I grew up by the coast, and always had this, you know, okay, I'll translate this, but this old school wooden boat built in the 60s for, you know, that you use in the archipelago. It's called, in Swedish, it's a snipa because it's pointy in the back and in the front. And did I just lose you guys?
No. We got you. Are you
good?
There?
The picture. I'm here. And I hear you. Just the picture froze up.
Oh, sorry.
I plugged in the charger and it freaked out. But as long as you hear me, we're good.
There we go.
Just bear with me for a moment. Oh, it's
Justin. Are you there?
I'm here.
This image is amazing. I don't know if you can hear us, but like, I got to take a screenshot of it. It is too freaking
This is fantastic.
Hold on. This is too much.
If we were to caption this right now, we'd be like, I'm so f***ing done with this interview.
Yeah. Just got it. I'll send it to you. All right. I think that his computer died. So maybe should just like really let the, hey, if the podcast is still rolling at this point in time, Jonas, thanks for coming on.
Okay. So what we'll do, let's just do this, guys. Let's continue to talk about the band. Guys, we had some technical difficulties with Jonas from Avatar. Hopefully we'll get him back here. If not, it's been a really interesting hour with him. And if you guys are paying attention, you're a fan, make sure and check out the Avatar Ages Impossible Concert Experience. They still got two more shows starting on Saturday. You can go to avatarages.com to pick up tickets for that. Shiprock 2022 is happening January 2022. Cabin's still available, so go to shiprock.com. You can also look at some of our forums on Facebook. We have cabin searches that you can get with other people who are wanting to go on, who are trying to make new friends. That might be a way to go on as well. Thank you again, guys, for joining Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast. We are part of the Sound Talent Media Group. We also want to thank our team, and that includes our executive producer, Al McManus. There he goes.
Woo! Woo!
He's showing us. Yeah.
Oh, he just started his
go
dad,
Buffalo.
Dick.
Go, hey, everyone, go Buffalo this weekend for Al.
Has it ever occurred to you? Has that?
Also want to thank our producer, Jen Zito, who's on the road right now, our coordinator, Heather Smith, and of course, the captain, Alan Koenig.
I guess my computer installed.
Sorry, we just started to take our clothes off.
All good.
Here.
Yeah. All good.
My computer, it did some updating thing or something.
Yeah, we all went for a quick spritz.
The good thing is we only have to do this last segment now, and then...
We filled in a bunch of stuff. Listen, we do a thing here called Walk the Plank. Which is we ask three questions, one from Chad, one from myself, and then one that is a fan question. And it's a random question. It has really nothing to do pertaining to music or anything of that sort. So we'll throw this at you and you give your best answer. Mm-hmm. All right. So Chad, you want to go first, my friend?
Yeah. How do you define integrity?
Wow, I should have a better answer for this because it has become such an important word.
Is there somebody in your life that you immediately, when you hear the word integrity, that you immediately think of?
Yeah, my wife.
Okay.
100%. And I feel like she sets an example for me, and I've learned a lot about integrity from her. And I guess I would put it something along the line of feeling like knowing where I've got myself and refusing to kind of, I guess, and therefore knowing where my line is and not letting anyone pass that line. And also not feeling that, knowing where I got to myself and therefore knowing where I'm not willing to go, you know, like, I guess that's knowing where I stand and standing by that.
I find it to be very refreshing and also beautiful that you have such a shining example of that in your life. So I don't know your wife, but that was a very cool answer. So thank you for that, man.
Oh, yeah.
So Jonas, what temptation do you try your hardest to resist?
I quit all nicotine and kicked that habit. I've kicked so many habits. This year in lockdown, I guess it has been a great year in terms of for me having time to try to really nurture healthy habits. You know, I think we all, like, this is the year where everyone either lost or gained 20 pounds, kind of thing. And in that, I try to have certain eating habits right now that goes against everything my instinct tells me to do, because I like to indulge. And everything else I've been kind of good control over. So dessert, late night dessert food, I guess. It's right now.
So sweets.
Sweet stuff I can stay away from way easier than, it's the fatty, salty stuff. It's the snacks. It's
cookies and stuff?
No, really more something deep fried.
Okay.
Or the potato
deep
chips.
Deep fried cookie?
Yeah, chips. Yeah.
Yeah. chips and fries and something breaded, like, you know, chili cheese balls or whatever.
Yeah. That's just really good. I'm really hungry right now. So thank you for the bad influence there.
Yeah, I'm not allowing myself to eat anymore. So this is pure, for me, mind training for the next, until tomorrow morning.
I can see you. I can see your gears turning. Me like, oh my God, I'm going to eat some fucking French fries.
Which makes it way easier to get up in the morning if you look forward to that. You know, the last thing I had now was my kale, ginger, protein powder, banana, and lime juice smoothie. Just those five ingredients and a ton of water. It works.
That sounds good.
Well, yeah. The ginger's a little interesting mixed in there with the powder, but yeah, I get it.
No, because the protein powder, I use rice protein powder that tastes like nothing or as little as possible.
Gotcha.
And so then, you know, then kale plus lime plus ginger, that's kind of Asia. Mm-hmm. And all is very refreshing, you know. As I do it with water, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Smashing. Justin, do you want me to take this the fan question, or you got it?
You go ahead and take it.
Okay, so it's pretty simple, but it's I think it'll have a really cool answer.
I always give long answers.
owned a boat, yeah, what would you name it?
That boat I mentioned before, that her name was Maria, so it's part like that would maybe, to some kind of play on word, or just dub, you know, like have that be the grandchild of the boat of my childhood. You know, it got sold when I was maybe 16, 17, 18, that around those years, a cabin was bought that took all the time instead, you know, because these old wooden things, they need extra care and love in the off season, you know? So something related to the, or my old friend Maria.
Do you think that are you referring to the cabin? When you say the cabin, are you referring to like a sauna? Are we talking about another sauna?
No, like a summer house family, like my family vacation house. I don't know, vacation house sounds so big and expensive.
I imagine it just being another sauna because of the sauna.
No, but actually I was taking selfies of myself standing in the snow, sending to my family and telling them that the family vacation house does need a sauna built.
That's awesome.
So you would be the christening of the Maria. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, Jonas, I know we had a little bit of technical difficulty there, but thank you so much for rejoining us and doing this incredible hour with us. And we're really privileged that you joined us tonight. Again, folks, if you want to catch the Avatar Impossible Concert Experience, you can go to avatarages.com and pick up tickets for the remaining two shows beginning this Saturday. Yeah, this Saturday will be Madness, and next week will be the final one, which will be Memories. And make sure and pick up their latest album, Hunter Gatherer.
And Memories, Jonas, I really want to say this, Memories, which will be the last show to conclude all of this, will be the first unmasked Avatar show in almost a decade.
Wow.
Due to us going, because that's the one where we go back to the three earliest albums. And Speaking of, you know, how Shipwreck people voted us at some point the most requested band, people get to vote on these different set lists based on their respective eras. And with the three first albums, overwhelmingly, all the songs from our third album were voted really high. And it's also, we're going to play our third album in its entirety, for the first time ever, obviously. You know, so it gets a special treatment that we just gave to a hunter-gatherer on this stream otherwise. And yeah, Unmasked, it's going to be incredibly special.
Wow, that's good. I had no clue. That's awesome.
One other thing coming up, and I hope it's still in the books for you guys, and it's another one of those pinch me moments. I assume you guys are still going to go out with Iron Maiden.
If the show happens, we will gladly show up for that show.
I imagine you would.
If we can travel and if people will be let into that arena, yes. It's that was the first band that we, as a band, traveled to see together. We all went to Stockholm and, you know, got a hostel and did all that together as friends, this way, way, way back when. It can't be overstated what that band means to us, as to anyone else who is into metal and in a metal band on so many levels. I don't think it will be the most fun I ever had on a stage, because there is that when you're the opening band, you have to treat it, you have to be a little bit competitive about it, you know? You have to we're gonna destroy them. You know, we have to find a weakness in a headliner, no matter who it is. But it's Iron fucking Maiden. So they are just too old, too legendary, but they're still too good at the same time. The legacy and the here and now with them, you know, puts us all to shame. And then the love and passion that we, the fans, have for them. And I remember how we treated the opening band, their opening band, that time when we went to Stockholm to see them, turning our backs, middle fingers up. I'm ready for that challenge, and I'm going to enjoy every moment of it. And I just know that I will get nothing for free that day.
Yeah, I saw them 2 years ago, and they just found a third gear. They're kind of back on top, and that man, their whole team is top notch. So that's gonna be a great tour if that does happen for you guys. So good luck with that.
And Justin saw your shit on the floor, and he said, "Let me just go ahead and rub your nose in
it." No, but it's,
I'm just saying,
but
man.
It's a very objective truth. It is. Yeah, I'm okay with feeling like this.
Yeah.
You know, but I just know what it's going to be like, and that's cool, and I will be very happy about it, and I very much look forward to 1 week after, look at the pictures and go, wait a minute, I was there.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah,
that's
exactly. Awesome.
Well, I look forward to seeing those pictures too, man. I think it's a really monumentally cool thing for your career. And
it really
congratulations on everything, and congratulations on an incredibly great stream.
Hey, Al had a quick question.
I have to know, and you may not even remember this, Johannes. Who was the band that you turned around and turned your back to that was opening for Maiden? Do you remember?
I don't know if I want to put that on the record. I don't talk. I really make an effort not talking down to other bands.
Can I ask what tour it was? And that way we all kind of
see. Justin will be able to figure that out. Yeah. That's fine.
What room did they play? What year?
Yeah. I gave you the city, and I said I was a teenager, so reduce.
Well, it's that thing when you're a teenager, though, right? It's that thing that you don't really appreciate just yet. You know, when I was a teenager playing music, Chad, you too, and Johannes, you mentioned how competitive your drummer was, and I've just been peeking in and out of this conversation. You know, when you're younger, it's way more of a competition until you start to mature and realize that there really is no competition in an art form.
And at the same time, in a way, you have to kind of make up your competition still. Like, you need to find different things that drives you. I've been thinking a lot about recently how, when you're a kid and whatever you get into, so let's say it's music, that means that the first time you will sit down and choose to hear what some grown-ups have to say about something are musicians, you know? Mm-hmm. So you will get a lot of your politics or life views from these bands that you are into. But ultimately, once you get older, I guess your sources of how you shape your ideology and your interest comes from more places and not just what Ozzy Osbourne thinks about something, you know? Yeah. With all due respect, of course. But it starts to be, you start to get nuances and things get more complex. But there's something to be said that happens to your way, how you listen to music as well. Because for a while there is like metal or death kind of attitude to it all. But maybe then you lose your virginity to a girl who's into jazz and something happens and you learn something about yourself and about music and you like different things suddenly. But while creating, I realized that in a way I kind of shape an ideology for myself for the time being, that that has to be certain ideals at that time in order to create something that makes sense, which again, like Hunter Gatherer was all about, not all about, but a lot of it was about embracing the aggression and exploring the darkness again, as Avatar Country was kind of dedicate ourselves to the gag really. And then it has to fit within that framework at that particular time. Then it's not the be all end all in life at large. But while working on something creative, it's good to say, I'm going to show all those fuckers, you know, and I'm going to destroy the world. And yes, like
you can be both though, right? You can be super competitive and super appreciative at the same time.
Yes, absolutely. But one thing that a vision that came to me at some point when we were working on Hunter Gatherer was that feeling. I saw us running across the plains, over the mountains together as a band with a bucket of water. We reached the coastlines, like the cliffs of Dover of England, so, you know, very steep down, and there's the ocean. We throw the bucket of water into the ocean and we yell, "You're welcome." And that's what it's like to release an album.
Wow. Like, that was an actual vision that you had?
Yeah.
Wow.
But
a lot of peyote.
Have you ever gone on Spotify and said, you know what, this software needs more tracks? You know, like it's there's not enough tracks on Spotify.
As if there's not enough. Yeah.
So, and that's the truth. But it can't be the truth that you live with at the time of creating. You have to think. You have to have, you know, like a bit of delusional grandeur, because then otherwise you will never, because then out in the world, you need to at least have some delusion of being adequate.
Right.
So at the time of writing the music, it has to be the most important thing to even have the tiniest chance to create a little crease of, is that what it's called? You know, that it foams a bit on the surface of those waves and that vast ocean of music.
Yeah.
Well, I think maybe
that was a great way to put that, by the way.
Of that vision is that you follow the water, the bucket of water into the sea, and you determine that you are the sea.
Yes.
Finding Nemo style,
Finding Nemo. So did you? I didn't know that your wife was into jazz music. That's interesting.
No, she wasn't. That was hypothetical for one of you guys.
Darn it! Darn it! I thought that's where the integrity came from. Was her love of jazz and you?
No. I also said, and this what I said is that you might have lost your virginity to someone who's into jazz music.
Yeah, I got you. And that's where I
met my wife when I was already in my 20s, and I had a happy.
Happy teenage years, right?
Yeah. So
it's a beautiful
but she's more a prog head, death metal, black metal, thrash metal, prog, progressive music.
Yeah, Jonas, thanks again, buddy. Best of luck with everything going forward. These next two episodes of the concert should be great, and from what I'm seeing on the Facebook pages, the people who have bought into it are just loving the hell out of it, so much success. Mm-hmm.
It sounds amazing. Very, very cool.
So thank you again. And hopefully we will cross paths again here real soon.
Absolutely. So, wash your hands. Don't let strangers spit in your mouths. If anyone, stay within your bubble and spit in each other's mouths. Keep it contained for the time being until you're vaccinated. And
there you go.
I look forward to hit the road again. Awesome. Be safe, all you right. guys.
Yeah.
I think you're dead, Dick. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.